in a time, in a place where each family seemed alike.
It's not fair. Never get what other kids have.
He wants a dad.
They were different from everyone else.
What are you looking at? Don't tell me the ball.
Until one day, fate sent them two strangers.
You've got to have a place to stay until that leg heals.
With the power to help them to find their way.
You know, baseball is a thing that if you push too hard, you get exactly the opposite of what you're trying for.
Just slow the ball down in your mind and let it float.
Oh my goodness!
He was everything they could ever hope for, and nothing they could possibly imagine.
Because his family was so kind, the genie granted them three wishes. One for the mother, one for the big brother, and one for the little boy.
What did the little boy wish for?
I'm not sure. What do you think?
He is not of this world. Are you saying he's from someplace else, like outer space?
Thanks, Jack. Jack, do you believe in magic?
Of course I believe in magic.
They want to know if you can help them the way you help me.
He can fly.
Three wishes. Patrick Swayze, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, Jurassic Park's Joseph Mazzello, and introducing Seth Mumy in a film by Martha Coolidge. Three Wishes.
Hello, hello, I'm Katie, and welcome to Retromade, your pop culture rewind. We're going to go back to October of 1995 today for the likely unknown to you family drama with a fantasy backdrop called Three Wishes. This is with our everyman, Patrick Swayze. And since I went solo for last episode with a lesser known Kurt Russell film, doing the same with Patrick this week, I'm very curious if you guys have heard of this. I will just say at the top, I don't know why it's less known. It's quite good. So if you're new to the show, welcome. I cover retro movies and the TV, music, and other pop culture of the time. If you've been on this journey with me, thank you so much for tuning in again. And this is your official reminder. If you have not rated or reviewed the show, please, please, please do so. Hey, you can do it while you listen to this episode. Hint, 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 hint. For those of you that are new, we start by opening a time capsule. So we're going to open the time capsule from October of 1995, the time that this movie came out, to kind of set the stage for what was going on in the world. Now, in this season one of our Ultimate Everyman, Kurt Russell and Patrick Swayze, we've covered a lot of films. We still have a few to go before the season ends, but we're getting to the point where we've covered a lot of the seasons in terms of Nielsen rated top shows. And this particular season we've covered go back to the Tu Wong Fu episode. And that's the 95-96 season, primetime. So as promised, actually, from the Winter People episode, last episode, I'm going to actually spend some time talking about one particular TV show that is near and dear to me, the famous sitcom Roseanne. And it was actually in the top of this particular time. And as a little added tie-in, one of the actors in Roseanne is also in this movie. So we'll get to that. Okay, so Roseanne. Now, please stay with me. I know that she can be a bit of a controversial figure, but just stay with me. Go on this ride with me.
Ha ha ha!
I'm sure there are many of you out there like me who adore this show. If you need a little refresher, it is a series that is centered on the Connor family. They are an American working class family that is struggling to get by on a very limited household income, Dan and Roseanne, and their three young children, Becky, Darlene, and DJ. They live at 714 Delaware Street in the drab fictional town of Lanford, Illinois. Now, later in the series, they do have a fourth child that they named Jerry Garcia. Connor, cute, right? We'll get to that. Now, this show ran for 9 seasons on ABC from 1988 to 1997. And then there was a season 10 revival in 2018. We'll get into this a little bit now. So season 11 was renewed after that 10th season. But if you guys can, I know that seems like forever ago. It's like both seems like yesterday and also a million years ago, 2018. She was famously fired for some incredibly racist remarks. And she had just kind of gone off the deep end on Twitter. This was not an isolated incident because there were several controversial tweets, insane conspiracy theories. So this was not a one-off, but that was, and as we'll talk about it, she wasn't necessarily the easiest person to work with either. So they fired her, and smartly, they actually pivoted. I mean, you fire the main person on the show, so the show was canceled, but nobody else did anything wrong, the cast, the crew. So they pivoted. And they retooled the show, and it went on to continue as The Connors. So technically a spinoff, but it was basically just the same show without Roseanne. And I think as of this recording, so it's June now, but in its sixth and final season, maybe it's over. I should have checked. Maybe it has had its finale. I have not caught up. I have not watched the very, very, very end of the sixth season, but I think it's its final season. Anyway, so in the new retooled show, Roseanne has died of an opioid overdose. And Dan, in the final episode, the final season, remarries to Katie Sagal. Peggy from Al Bundy and Peggy, Married with Children. Peggy from Married with Children, took me on it. She's in tons of stuff, but I love her. So I think that was really cute. They had him remarry her. Now, in the new show, I think in the 10th season when Roseanne was still in the 2018 version, they spoke of, here's how they addressed Jerry, the fourth child, not being there. He was like working away on like an oil rig or something, I want to say. So he wasn't in the show, but they briefly addressed it. The rest of the time, he's never mentioned, so he's not a part of it. It's almost as if they didn't have the fourth kid. Additionally, Jackie in the show has a son named Andy, but in the resurrected version of it, he's nowhere to be found and is not mentioned. So those couple things kind of irked me about the newer version of the show. But for the rest of the conversation, I really would like to stick to the original version, the original 9 seasons that went through 97. Although The Connors is quite good, it doesn't have quite the je ne sais quoi that the original Roseanne had. So the IMDb shows that this has a 7 out of 10, which is pretty good. And I will say that it did receive positive reviews for its realistic portrayal of a working class American family with two parents working outside of the home, and that the two lead characters, Dan and Roseanne, were noticeably overweight, but that their weight wasn't necessarily like a target for the jokes necessarily. It was just, that's who these people are. Okay. So we didn't really see that on TV. Really, we still don't see it at all, with a couple of exceptions that I can think of. It was the number one show from 1989 to 1990. That was its second season, number one show. It remained in the top 4 for 6 out of its 9 original seasons, and in the top 20 for 8 of those. One particular episode, and I can picture it too, the name of the episode is called A Stash from the Past, is where they find their old dope and get high. And it's a really, 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 because they're like children of the 60s, and now they're adults in the 90s. raising kids. But that was in 93. And that particular episode was ranked number 21 on TV Guide's 100 greatest episodes of all time. Pretty high praise, right? And then in 2002, TV Guide also did some other rankings, and Roseanne was ranked number 35 of the top 50 greatest shows of all time. And it was in, let's see, they did some more rankings in 2013, and it was ranked number 32 of 60 best series of all time. Now, John Goodman's character, Dan Connor, was ranked number 13 in TV Guide's list of the 50 greatest TV dads of all time. And I think we can all agree, we all love Dan. Dan's the best. So the opening credits is pretty famous. It's kind of the trademark view around the kitchen table. And throughout the series, they're doing different activities at the table. So let's see, seasons 1 and 2, they're eating dessert. Seasons 3 and 4, they're playing cards. And season 5, they're eating pizza. Season 6 and 7, they're eating Chinese food. And then the last two of the regular seasons, 8 and 9, was pretty cool. They did like a morphing of them over the years, starting with their first, like, sort of like the portraits you would have in the hallway of a family home. And then it morphed from, and Roseanne started and ended it because she's famous for having a lot of different looks over the show. So it just kind of morphed into that. It was pretty cool. And I mean, even now, I think it's a pretty cool effect several years later. And then the Blues Traveler guy did the most recent season. The last show was a little bit different. It had lyrics. John Popper, he is the Blues Traveler guy. So he actually was in an episode or maybe two. I think maybe just the one episode where he plays like a former bandmate of Dan's called Stingray Wilson. And that was in season 8, if you guys remember that episode with the Blues Traveler guy. He's a wild one too. Okay, so this series, Roseanne, was created by Matt Williams. And you guys do know who he is. He also created or produced Home Improvement, The Cosby Show, A Different World, and some films such as What Women Want, Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken, and Where the Heart Is. So that's who Matt Williams is, created, produced. I'm sure you've seen these names all over, everywhere. Chuck Lorre, Marcy Carsey, Tom Warner. And then that was for the original run. And then the later revival seasons, we have Bruce Helford, Whitney Cummings, Sarah Gilbert, and Tony Hernandez. And directing shows like this, there's usually a lot of different directors. So that's the case for most of the seasons. However, John Pasquin directed the vast majority of the episodes for seasons 1, 2, and 10. And he's also familiar in that he also directed many episodes of Family Ties, Growing Pains, Alice, and Newhart. All right, so everybody knows Roseanne Barr is our lead character as Roseanne Connor, John Goodman playing Dan, and Roseanne's sister Jackie Harris is played by the lovely Laurie Metcalf, and she's just brilliant in this. She's my favorite character. I feel like I relate to Jackie the most. And then the kids, so the oldest daughter is Becky, and this is really interesting, actually. This is one of those shows that really had fun with changing the actress of the character who played someone without, it's like they did it and then they poked fun at it. It was just like, there's a new Becky. But so Lisey Goranson was the original, and she played Becky from seasons 1 through 5. And then she came back for season 8. And then she came back for the revivals. But the seasons where Lacey was not played by Becky, it was Sarah Chalk. And you guys all know who she is. I forget the character's name, but she's probably most famous for Scrubs, but she's in tons of stuff. You guys know who she is. And I liked some of the things that they did to poke fun at having two Beckys. They say on the show something about Bewitched having two Darrens, and how that was so dumb. How do they think people aren't going to notice that there's two Darrens? And then there's a time where after Lacey comes back, so she's been off the show for a couple years and she comes back, It's not addressed other than a couple of times. One time Roseanne, another time Darlene says, where the hell have you been? She's like, why do people keep asking me this? Sarah Chalk actually made a cameo. So the second Becky makes a cameo just as a random mom with trick-or-treaters in one of the Halloween episodes. And she says something like, oh, this looks like a cute house or a fun Halloween house or something like that. And then they go to Disney World, as they do back in the day. That was like a thing because Disney owns, I don't know, did they own ABC or something? I don't know, something like that. They go to Disney World and second Becky is there for this particular. So there's one season, I think maybe it was season 8, where it was both Beckys had different episodes, which was a little interesting. So the Disney World one, Roseanne is like, oh, isn't it nice that you're here this week? Something like that. And then there's a play on the Patty Duke show. You know how sometimes sitcoms will have like little like buttons or little scenes at the end of the show. And this one was a little skit about Patty Duke. I think it was even in black and white of the two Beckys. They're like, two Beckys. They're nearly identical Beckys, which must be the Patty Duke theme song. So anyway, that's the two Beckys. I actually did not like Sarah Chalk in this at all. She was probably the weakest actress. I did not like how she played Becky. I really like the original Becky. Sarah Gilbert plays Darlene. And then Michael Fishman plays DJ, the youngest, the boy. And DJ stands for David Jacob. And what's interesting about the character DJ is that the pilot episode had a different actor playing DJ than the rest of the run. So Michael Fishman plays him the entire series except for the pilot episode, and his name was Sal Barone. Apparently, I also read that Macaulay Culkin auditioned for the role of DJ, but the role was actually given to Michael Fishman because he looked so much more like Roseanne and the family, just had that look. And he was really good. I will say when DJ's little, I think he's pretty good. And I don't really like kids in things. Like they're just not, they're usually not good. And the Connor kids are really good, I think, which probably helps my enjoyment of the show. However, the exception to that is somehow Michael Fishman's acting gets worse over time. So as he grows up, it doesn't hit. I don't like it. So he and Sarah Chalk don't like them. But then the rest of the cast. So that's the main family. Then Natalie West plays Roseanne's really good friend, Crystal. And she ends up marrying Dan's dad, played by Ned Beatty, Ed O'Connor, or not O'Connor, just Ed Connor. He marries Crystal later. That's kind of a whole big controversy of the show. Bev Harris is Roseanne and Jackie's mom. She's played by Estelle Parsons. And then we have Mark and David Healy. So this is a show where Becky, the oldest daughter, goes out with and ends up marrying the cool, you know, bad guy that the Connors hate. Dan and Roseanne hate him, but I think she's like 17 when they elope. Anyway, that's Mark Healy, and he is played by Glenn Quinn, who's really good looking. He actually passed away. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. He's an Irish actor, and you wouldn't know it because he doesn't, you know, he's able to do the Chicagoan accent pretty well. And then his little brother, David, is played by Johnny Galecki. And you guys all know who he is. He's been in tons of things, but like most recently Leonard in The Big Bang Theory. But what's also interesting here, so not only are the two brothers dating the two sisters, so Becky and Mark are together, and David and Darlene are together. And then over the series, David ends up sort of being like an adopted son. He ends up living with the Connors because his mom is not a great mom, kind of an abusive mom. But when we originally meet this character, Mark's little brother, his name is Kevin. And then the next time we meet him, and then for the rest of the series, his name's David. We get a hilarious portrayal of Leon, played by Martin Mull. Originally, and so he's in it a lot. So originally, he's the boss of Roseanne when she works at the... So Roseanne, over the course of the show, has so many different jobs, one of which is a waitress at a mall diner called Rodbell's, or the, Rodbell's department store, and there's a diner in it. And Martin Mall and Roseanne are just like, they have this relationship. They hate each other, but then they end up being business partners later when Roseanne and Jackie and Sandra Bernhardt's character, which we'll get to, Nancy, they go in and buy their own little diner. They call it the Lanford Lunchbox. And Richard Mall, as Leon, becomes one of their partners because these ladies don't really know how to run a business. And he does. So anyway, his character is gay. And his partner on the show is played by Fred Willard. His name is Scott on the show, but they're hilarious on this. So Fred Willard and Martin Mull, both straight, but they play these gay characters on Roseanne, and it's hilarious. And then Sandra Bernhardt plays Nancy, also a friend. So it's a small town. Everybody's kind of friends. Everybody grew up, went to high school together. And Nancy, who is originally dating and marries Tom Arnold's character, Arnie, who's like the wacky, crazy, like weird friend of Dan that everybody knows, he's, you know, it's Arnie, who, so Tom Arnold at that time was actually married to Roseanne Barr, so that's probably why he was on the show. But Arnie and Nancy get together and they're married, and then when they get divorced, she realizes that she's into women, and then we get all these guest stars of people that she's dated, like Morgan Fairchild is one of her girlfriends, and everybody's like, how are you? And like Muriel Hemingway. Is that right? Yeah. It's like, how are you getting all these like super attractive women? Anyway, that's kind of funny. Let's see, who else do we have? Oh, please don't forget that George Clooney was also in Roseanne first season, maybe the second, but he plays Booker. I love that name, first of all. And he originally plays their boss or supervisor, I should say, when they work at Wellman's Plastics. So Jackie, Crystal, like all the friends all work at Wellman's together in this plastics factory, and he's their supervisor. And then Jackie ends up dating him for a while, because why wouldn't you? Yeah. And then their friends, they have some other friends in this town, Chucky and Anne-Marie, and they are probably one of only a couple of Black characters that we meet. They're friends. The reason I bring that up is it does come up in some of the episodes. There's, because they cover kind of hard to discuss topics like racism. Anyway, Chucky is played by James Pickens Jr. And you guys know him, well, from a number of things, but he played Dr. Richard Weber on Grey's Anatomy. And then Anne-Marie, his wife, is played by Adela Barnes. And then another one of the waitresses at that diner with Martin Mull playing Leon, the Rodbell's Diner, is waitress Bonnie. I always really liked her character too. So Bonnie, she's that blonde, like looks like she's like a trucker's, not a trucker, a biker's woman, you know, like she kind of has that look to her. Well, turns out she in real life, so she's played by Bonnie Bramlett. So it's her real name. She was a backup singer for Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And in fact, she calls him this, her old man on the show is actually played by David Crosby. So he's one of the guest stars. So that's fun. And then Shelley Winters plays Nana Mary, and she's one of my favorites too. She's hilarious. So Nana Mary is Jackie and Roseanne's grandmother. So she's in this. And then I alluded to some guest stars. There are so many. I don't even know where to start with the guest stars, but some that had longer roles or more of a recurring role would be Jim Varney. Do you guys remember when, it's probably not the best season, but once they win the lottery, Jackie and Roseanne go on this quest of being rich, essentially, and they meet this prince something or other, I forget, but he's played by Jim Varney. So that's probably one of the most famous ones. Then some of the others, Sharon Stone plays like, hers is kind of funny, like a trailer park trashy lady. Morgan Fairchild, Florence Henderson, Ellen DeGeneres, Loretta Lynn, Tim Curry. I kind of forgot about him. He scams them out of some money. Stephen Root, Christopher Lloyd, French Stewart, Jerry Springer, Marlo Thomas, Steven Seagal, James Brolin. He plays like the son of, again, once they're rich. I think Roseanne is actually like, there's a period of time where Dan's kind of out of the picture for a while. And Roseanne is like romantically interested in the son of the really rich woman. And it's played by James Brolin. It's quite lovely because they're like, God, you're good looking. And he is. And then we have Dan Florek, Toby Maguire, Brad Garrett plays a loan officer. Wayne Newton plays himself. Neil Patrick Harris, Ed Begley Jr., Joan Collins. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays a super annoying friend of DJ's. DJ can't stand him. And actually, I think he's the son of Florence Henderson. Or maybe I'm confusing another kid. Paul Feig, Vicki Lawrence plays an old flame of Dan's, and that sparks a fight between Dan and Roseanne. Mariel Hemingway plays another love interest of Nancy. Danny Masterson, Tracy Lords, Ashley Johnson, Don Wells, Jenna Elfman, Rhea Seehorn, Bruce Willis, Fred Thompson, and Jack McGee, who we've talked about on this show a few times. So lots of guest stars. I could have gone on for five more minutes about guest stars, but so I love this show, and so did the award shows. The Emmys, in 93, both Roseanne Barr and Laurie Metcalf, who plays Jackie, won Emmys for their respective categories. And then the series was nominated for 27 different Emmys overall through its series. And despite its getting a ton of critical praise and the super high ratings, the show itself was never nominated for Best Comedy Series, which I did not realize. But they did get some Golden Globes. So the series won the Golden Globe Award for Best Television Series, Musical, or Comedy in 93, as did Roseanne and John Goodman for their respective categories. And then the series itself also won both a Peabody Award in 92 and a People's Choice Award for Favorite New Television Comedy Program in 89. And then Roseanne Barr herself won five more People's Choice Awards for, let's see, favorite female performer in a new TV program in 89, favorite female all-around entertainer in 90, favorite female TV performer in 90, 94, and 95. And then once the TV Land Awards came about, the whole cast in 2008, except for Laurie Metcalf, reunited at the TV Land Awards to receive the Innovator Award. And in their acceptance speech, they did honor their late cast member, Glenn Quinn, who we talked about as playing Mark Healy, Becky's husband. He was born in Dublin, and he passed away in 2002. He was only 32 years old, and unfortunately, he passed of a heroin overdose. So that's really sad. I really liked his character a lot on the show. So that's kind of a bummer. And if you guys were watchers of this, you probably love it for many reasons. But some of their holiday shows, those are by far my favorites. Every year they had a spectacular Halloween special and Thanksgiving. It was awesome. You guys, I hope that I'm not the only one who loves this. Please let me know. Roseanne has been married several times. All three of her ex-husbands, Bill Pentland, Tom Arnold, and Ben Thomas, have made at least one guest appearance on the show. Supposedly, both Roseanne and Laurie Metcalf had a crush on John Goodman. And then those of you who watch the show a lot will know what I'm talking about, but there was one episode in season 5 all about the chicken shirt. So that's actually another thing I really like about this show is it not only seems normal, but they rewear clothes like a normal person would. So it's not a new outfit every time we see them. So I think those are nice touches. But there's this shirt. It's this white oversized t-shirt with a chicken and an egg on it. And usually it's worn by Roseanne. But there's an episode that in different scenes, a different cast member wears it. So all five of the different cast members are seen wearing it. And I don't know if this is true or not, but that was done in part to annoy Tom Arnold. At that time was her ex-husband who apparently hated the shirt. So that's kind of fun. Now, it was not originally called Roseanne. Life and Stuff. Can you guys imagine that? No, I think Roseanne is way better. David and Mark are brothers, right? So Johnny Galecki and Glenn Quinn. David never calls them Dan and Roseanne. It's always Mr. or Mrs. Connor. But the opposite is true of Mark. The older brother never calls them Mrs. Connor. He says Dan or Roseanne. That's interesting, eh? There's an episode where DJ is supposed to kiss a girl in his class in a, you know, like a kid's theater performance, whatever show they were doing. I don't know if it was Romeo and Juliet or what. And he didn't want to kiss the girl. And it turns out that he didn't want to kiss her because she was Black. And so they explored that on this episode. And her name in the episode, the girl's name is Gina. Well, as it turns out, those of you who know where I'm going with this, that's who he ends up married to in the revival of the series, that same girl. And they have a daughter named Mary. But Gina's not really in it because she is stationed in, I want to say, Iraq, maybe Afghanistan. She's in the military, so she's stationed somewhere else. So DJ sort of acts as a single father in it. But so that's a nice little closed-looped situation. So Jackie has a ton of boyfriends on the show, one of whom is named Fisher, not to be confused with Booker. But that particular relationship on the show ends violently. Fisher is physically abusive to Jackie, and Dan beats him up and gets arrested. And they somehow make it funny, like an abusive episode is funny. Well, the actress and actor who played them, so Laurie Metcalf and Matt Roth, who played Fisher, they actually started dating in 1993 after Roth's run of the show was complete. They married in 2005 and were together until 2014. I did not know that. Fun tidbit. Okay, so I guess I have to touch on the controversy that happened. So Roseanne, I think she's kind of known for having some mental health struggles. And she always has been a bit out there and notorious for behaving badly and just, I don't know, behind the scenes, the show, cast and crew associated, you know, and with interviews with executives, they actually had previously considered dumping her from the show because there was so much. She just caused a lot of trouble, throwing temper tantrums, screaming at people, locking herself in the dressing room, storming off, threatening to quit. So just, you know, a little bit of a diva, I guess, you know, a little too big for her britches, shall we say. But also, yeah, I think, and I don't think she's really hidden the fact that she struggles with some mental health issues. The producers, when interviewed, I think it was Marcy Carsey, those two, they considered her to be a nightmare to work with. And so all of these things probably didn't help her cause when she made a pretty significant mistake on Twitter. But like I said, it wasn't an isolated incident. She was like leading up to this, exhibiting a lot of self-destructive behavior with lots of conspiracy theories. And it wasn't her first racist tweet either. So I say all that so she got fired. And I'm glad that the show went on because the rest of the cast and crew deserved to have the show. And they, even when they resurrected the show, they were already worried about her behavior. So they made a deal with her they're like, listen, you got to stay off Twitter. And she was like, okay, I will. And then she didn't. So they're like, you know, we gave you chances and yeah, you effed it up. Sorry, lady, it's your fault. But I will say, having said all that, I love this show. I'm able to look past that, right? So I think that Roseanne is an extremely well-written and acted sitcom about a tight-knit family that's working class. They tackle some extremely topical social issues, but in a funny and smart and innovative way. And I regularly watch this. I consider it a comfort show. And she's always been controversial. You know, I know, I get it. Like some people, I get it. But part of the reason that the show is so beloved is because she and the show weren't afraid to tackle those hard issues about, you know, we talked about a few of them now, but abuse, abortion, gay characters front and center, mental health, depression, racism, classism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So like a lot of real things. It wasn't just like a surface level sitcom, but they tackled it in a really realistic, but funny way. And I think that's hard to do. I can't really wrap my head around someone that early on, she went from championing these types of issues to devolving like really rapidly into some pretty dark places. But like I said, I'm still able to watch the show and very much enjoy the show. And aside from when DJ gets a little older, he's like not a great kid actor, but it's a genuine show. It's a funny show. And a lot of times those two things are hard to combine. And I think that's a little bit of the magic here with Roseanne. It might be in my top five, but if not in the top five, it's definitely in my top 10 sitcoms of all time. I friggin' love it. And here's where you guys can watch it. I watch it on Cozy TV. I think it's on CMT too, if you get that. And then it streams on Peacock and Sling TV. So I would love to hear from you guys. Email me or comment on YouTube or on the Facebook page when I post about this episode. Let me know what you think of Roseanne. Do you still watch it? Do you like it? Did you hate it from the get-go? Let me know. Okay, we're going to continue on now. Thank you for indulging me in my little Roseanne mini to continue to set the stage in our time capsule from October of 95. The top 10 billboards from that particular week, October 27th. Number one is Fantasy by Mariah Carey. Number two, Gangsta's Paradise, which is from the Dangerous Minds movie. That's Coolio featuring LV. Janet Jackson's Runaway is number three. Number four is Kiss from a Rose by Seal. I hate that song. Number five is You Are Not Alone by Michael Jackson. And then do you guys remember? I totally forgot about this until now. As I Lay Me Down by Sophie B. Hawkins. I know you know this song. I had forgotten about it until now. Number seven, I do not know what this is. I looked it up. It's pretty good. It's called Tell Me by Groove Theory. It's actually a pretty good song, like a woman singer, and it's an R&B song. It's pretty good, but have no memory of that. Hootie and the Blowfish, only Wanna Be With You. Hate it. Cannot stand it. Maybe for the first two times I heard it, it was like, all right, yeah. But it got played out so fast. It's one of those for me anyway. Number nine. It's called Back for Good, and the band is called Take That. You know the song. It's like, I want you back for good. I want you back for good. It's a boy band that's just lesser famous. They didn't quite make it to the level of Backstreet Boys and NSYNC at that time. So that's who Take That is. And you guys know the song. I know you do. And then number 10, a very famous song by Natalie Merchant. It's her Carnival song. Very good song. It's just different. Yeah, I quite like it.
Life walks these streets in a carnival of sights to see.
Okay, news and events from October of 1995. Farm Aid 8. Took me a minute to do those Roman numerals. I did not realize there were 8 of these, but in 95, performers include Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, Neil Young, Hootie and the Blowfish, Dave Matthews Band, John Conley, and Steve Earle. Also at this time was the OJ verdict. Oh, man. I think everyone was glued to the TV for however long this trial lasted. But in October, do you guys remember what happened? OJ Simpson is found not guilty of the murder of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman in L.A. The Million Man March was held in Washington, D.C. I guess I thought it was earlier, but yeah, 95 Million Man March. So there was over 830,000 African-American men that attended. I don't know why maybe it was closer to a million because that's not quite a million, but that's what they called it. Quebec votes in a referendum to remain a part of Canada. I feel like that happens. It's like Brexit. And I feel like Texas is always trying to leave the US or California. Like they're like, we don't need you. Well, Quebec decides we actually do need Canada, apparently. So that happened. Now we have a few weddings and deaths before we get into what movies were happening at the time. So Ted Danson of Cheers marries Academy Award-winning actress Mary Steenburgen. They're an adorable Hollywood couple. Love them. Also, Family Ties actress Meredith Baxter, she weds screenwriter Michael Blodgett. Do you guys know who the first Miss America was? Miss America from 1921. Apparently, that's the first time. Her name is Margaret Gorman Cahill, and she died at age 90 in October of 1995. Also, British Prime Minister died at 92. Shit, which one was it? It's Alec Douglas Home. He was the Conservative Party from 1963 to 1964, was the Prime Minister in Britain. And he died at age 92. Alec Douglas Home. Also, Paolo Gucci died. Now, who is Paolo Gucci? There's a long line of the fashion designers. He's the son of Aldo Gucci, the grandson of Guccio Gucci, who's the founder of the company. So Paolo died at age 64. Shannon Hoon is, oh, you guys remember, you maybe don't know the name Shannon Hoon. Shannon was the vocalist of the band Blind Melon, and he died of a drug overdose at age 28. I loved that. I really liked Blind Melon, the one, like the song with the bee in the field. Yeah, you guys know what I'm talking about. But his name was Shannon Hoon. I don't think I knew that. Okay, well, Three Wishes was the, it's not bode well. It's the number 27 movie in October. There were so many movies that came out back in the day in the mid 90s. There were so many movies that it came in at 27. Now, that doesn't sound that great, right? However, to be fair, Mallrats was number 30 and Empire Records was number 40. Like that many movies in the theater and during October. And those both, Mallrats and Empire Records, have cult followings. Like especially Empire Records, friggin' love that movie. So I don't know. I guess the 90s were just wild that way. But I don't think anybody really knew. I'm not sure what the deal is, because Three Wishes is a good movie. Anyway, but the movies that really did top the box office at this time, we have Seven, Get Shorty, Assassins, Dead Presidents, How to Make an American Quilt, To Die For, Devil in a Blue Dress, Now and Then, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, The Big Green, and Dangerous Minds, of course. Let's get into the movie Three Wishes. It was released on October 27th, 1995. It's rated PG. And I did have to double check that because we get some Swayze butt in it. And I don't know what the rules are for these ratings. It has a 6.1 on IMDb. And the director here is Martha Coolidge, who also directed Valley Girl and Real Genius. And I thought, I wonder if she is related to Jennifer Coolidge. So I looked it up, and she is. They don't know each other, though. They've not met, but they're somehow related. And they are both, you know, far relatives of the late President Calvin Coolidge. That's funny. And then, so that's the director, Martha Coolidge. We have writers Clifford Green and Ellen Green, and they are a husband and wife writing team. They did divorce in 2004, though. But they wrote on like Space Camp in 1986 and Bless This Child in 2000. And then the other writer is Elizabeth Anderson. She doesn't have not very many credits, but they do include the 1994 movie Lassie and The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea in 2000. For cast, we have our Patrick Swayze, one of our ultimate everyman, and he plays Jack McLeod. And this is the third time that he has played someone named Jack. This movie, Black Dog, and Fatherhood. Did you know that? Now you do. The lovely Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio plays Jeannie. You guys definitely know her. Probably most known for playing Tony Montana's sister, Gina, in Scarface. She also played Maid Marian in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. She's friggin' gorgeous. You guys got to watch this movie. So her name's Jeannie. And then her son is Tom. She's got two sons. The main character is Tom. He's played by Joseph Mazzello, who also was Tim in the Jurassic Park movie, the first one, I think, and The River Wild, and also The Social Network. Seth Mumy plays Gunny, the little brother, and he's a really cute kid in this. I thought so anyway. He did a couple of things, but he did not continue acting, so doesn't really have any other credits to speak of. Phil, who is trying to, he's like, not really her love interest, but he's trying to date, and he's played by David Marshall Grant. He's also in Forever Young, The Stepford Wives, The Devil Wears Prada, and then he also was a producer of the Brothers and Sisters TV series, so he's pretty well known. There's a little league team in this, coached by Coach Shremka, and Jay O'Sanders plays him. He does have a lot of credits. Let's see. Kiss the Girls and Along Came a Spider, which I think is that same book series. The Day After Tomorrow and Daylight with my man, Sylvester Stallone. Michael O'Keefe. Okay, here we go. Here is our crossover actor from Roseanne. He plays Jackie's boyfriend, husband, baby's father of her son, Fred. In this movie, he's our narrator. We have, it's one of those. And he's the adult version of Tom, the main character. Yeah, but I think he's probably most known for playing Fred in Roseanne. But he is in a lot of stuff. He was nominated for an Oscar for his supporting role in The Great Santini from 1979. Never seen that, but maybe I should check it out. And then has anyone seen Sneaky Pete with Giovanni Ribisi? I love him. And it's a cute, fun show. I can't remember which streamer it was on, but he's the detective. Michael O'Keefe plays a detective in that. And lots, he's just in a ton of things. Now, another actor that carries over into one of our other episodes is John Deal. In this, he plays one of Tom's friends on the Little League team, Leland. He plays Leland's dad, and he's not really a very likable character, which we'll get into. John Deal, who plays him, is known for his role in The Client. And we actually talked about him in the Stargate episode because he plays Kowalski, one of the other military guys in Stargate. And then we have Joyce is a friend. I don't know if she's her sister or her friend of Jeannie, but her name is Joyce, and she's played by Diane Venora, and she was actually nominated for a Golden Globe in Bird from 1988. She played Justine in Heat, great movie, and I thought this was interesting because I loved this. I don't really recall her in it, but Gloria, aka Lady Capulet, in the 1996 Romeo and Juliet, you know, the one with Claire Danes and Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah, that's her. And then Little Leland, the boy, the friend, is played by David Zahorsky. He is in this and My Summer Story in 94, and that's it. Just that. The music is by Cynthia Miller, and Miller is spelled with an A-R. And she's not, she did a lot of made-for-TV movies, music in those, but not any big, big Hollywood movies that I really took note of. Okay, so I guarantee that the vast majority of you have not seen this, so thank you for listening. And go watch it. It's really good, but I'm going to talk about it so that you aren't lost. So the description is when Jeannie Holman is driving with her two sons, Tom and Gunny, she accidentally runs into a drifter named Jack McLeod, who breaks his leg. Feeling sorry for him, she invites Jack and his dog, Betty Jane, to stay at her house until his leg has healed. After having some difficulties to adapt to his new lifestyle, Jack soon finds himself loved by the family, and they all want him to stay. When he starts teaching baseball to Tom, who misses his father, who's missing in the Korean War, the two of them develop a strong bond. Meanwhile, Gunny believes that there's more to Jack and Betty Jane than meets the eye, and he's determined to find out. The budget of this was $10 million, and it made $7 million in the box office. Not great. Okay, so I don't know. I don't think whether something makes money really has it. Sometimes I guess it's an indicator of a good movie, but a lot of times it takes a while. You know, there's a lot of cult followings, or just the movies that make money a lot of times, in my opinion now, are just like these. There's no risks taken. I'll just say that. So plus in the 90s, there were tons of independent movies. As we talked about, there was like well over 40 movies in the theater that were ranked. So I'm telling you guys, watch Three Wishes. I think you'll like it. Yeah, it's like a family drama that's got some fantasy elements to it, which is totally not my jam, like at all. I'm kind of surprised I like this. Honestly, if Patrick Swayze wasn't in it, I probably wouldn't have given it a chance either. But okay, so it opens with a picture-perfect suburban neighborhood. That's very 90s, right? With people doing things, kids playing, and there's a voiceover about it being Memorial Day, and this is present day. So we quickly see behind the facade of things being perfect, and the reality is financial troubles for Tom, our main character, and they're headed to the cemetery because it's Memorial Day, and there's chaos in the car. The kids are fighting in the backseat. He's worried about losing his business and probably his house soon. And he's visibly annoyed by the kids fighting. He's just not in a good headspace. And so he almost hits this guy and his dog walking into the cemetery. And we see him kind of longingly look like, do I know him? And it spurs the memory. So now we're back in 1955 when he's a kid. It's also Memorial Day. So now we have Tom and his little brother, Gunny. They're headed to the cemetery with their now widowed mother, Jeannie. And so the dad is presumed to be dead in the Korean War. And Jeannie does actually hit a man with her car accidentally. And it's a quote unquote drifter. And it's Patrick Swayze. So his name is Jack. And that's who she hits. She actually, not just a little bump, she hits him and it breaks his leg. And he's with his dog, who's named Betty Jane. And I don't know if maybe I've just watched too many Sylvester Stallone movies, but I got major Rambo vibes at this scene because there's a cop there that comes to the scene and he's a major dick. And you guys know the actor too, maybe not by his name, but the name of the actor is Neil McDonough. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, McDonough. And he's in Desperate Housewives, Yellowstone, Boomtown, Band of Brothers, et cetera. He's in tons of stuff. So that's who the cop is, and he's a real prick. He actually, so the mom is, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Oh my God. She tries to go over to him. The cop stops her, and he gets mad at Jack for running into a car. And hey, don't forget, hitchhiking is illegal. Get out of here. Seemed very Rambo, right? Anyway, so what's wild is, okay, she's a single mother with two little kids, and she's gorgeous. And despite all of her intuition and all of her friends and neighbors' major unease, she invites this man, strange man, to come stay with her and her kids. Yep, she does just that. And the idea is, because he doesn't want to put her out. He's a nice guy. Plus, it's Patrick Swayze. The idea is until his leg heals. So, I mean, I was watching it being very uneasy too. I would never do that. But also most drifters don't look like Patrick Swayze. So I don't know. I kind of get it. Here's what Patrick Swayze looks like as a drifter. I mean, He doesn't look, he's got a very well manicured beard. He has like a tweed sport coat on and one of those like newsboy caps that I find super hot, AKA Tommy Shelby. Anyone? From the Peaky Blinders. I just love that look. So anyway, he does not look like your typical drifter person, transient type. So it's really quite nice. Obviously, we get all of these nice scenes because leading up to this, Tom is missing out on the dad-son activities. They're at this like picnic for Memorial Day, and there's like all these activities for dads and their sons to do, and Tom doesn't have a dad. He's on this baseball team. He's really not very good at it. You know, all the dads are there, but he doesn't have a dad. Also at that picnic, there's all these Jell-O molds. It was just kind of a fun little reminiscent thing of the 50s and 60s, I guess, when Jell-O molds were a thing that people brought to a potluck type deal. So Tom wants a dad. He doesn't have a dad. And wouldn't you know, Jack ends up sort of filling that role for Tom. He like majorly helps this baseball team who's not good get good. He meditates, which at the time in the 50s, like that's got to be wild. But he teaches them, you know, like the mental piece of baseball. And he has a saying to the boys. He's like, try to just do the opposite. You're too much in your head trying to swing and hit. So try and miss. And then he helps them meditate. So he has the idea. It's like everything contains its own opposite, I think is the saying that he says to help the boys get good. He also helps Tom practice his swinging and batting, I should say. He's on crutches, but he pitches to him, and that will come into play here in a second. Because the coach of this little league team, he's like, who is this mystery man? And he's like, Jack McLeod, that was this White Sox player from back in the day, and I don't know whatever happened to him. He was really good, but he was only on the team for one season. He just disappeared. So now all the dads and everybody, they're like, we like this drifter man because he's a famous baseball player. But Jack denies it. Getting back to him filling that dad role, Tom even gets him a Father's Day card for Father's Day. And it breaks Jack's heart because he knows he's not going to be able, he knows he can't stay and be a dad to Tom. But it's a really heartwarming series of scenes. I don't know. And I don't even have kids. You'd think I wouldn't care, but it's great. I do want to touch on the house because I love mid-century modern decor. House architecture, all of that. Their house is awesome. It's super sweet mid-century modern house. And I'm not entirely sure where this is set, but my guess is Palm Springs. It gives me Palm Springs vibes. And we see at the edge of the town or the edge of this new suburban development in 1955, there's a billboard that says, it advertises family dream homes starting at, any guesses, you guys, how much these dream houses cost? 1955? $13,500. I thought that was funny. And then, okay, let me see here. How do I tell you about the nude sunbathing by Patrick Swayze? I was not expecting this in a family drama, but now granted, his clothes, so he's like out on a lawn chair, like an outside chair. He's like sitting, not laying on a lamp chair, sitting in like an upright chair. And his clothes are like on the clothesline to dry. So probably only has one outfit. So he's washed it and he's waiting for it to dry. And he's getting a tan because he's this free spirit guy, right? Well, the neighbors of this like perfect, tidy little development, they're pretty uptight and they call him a beatnik, and he's getting some sun. And when he gets up to grab his pants to put on, because he thinks he's alone, and then here all these people come in, and we get a pretty sweet peek at Swayze's ass in this. And one of the neighbors at the sight of this literally falls over. So that was a great scene. I really liked it. Meanwhile, though, in all seriousness, he is filling this role for both Tom and Jeannie. They have a lot of heart-to-heart talks, and they're giving each other looks, you know, and they really would make a fantastic couple. They are both just incredibly beautiful people, both of them. I'm like, wow, they would make a striking couple. I would like that to happen. But so he's mysterious. And some of the mystery comes into play in a few ways. So she sees him writing in a journal in his room at night. And then when she snoops, there's no words. It's blank pages. And then it falls out of her hand. She doesn't see, but we as the audience see the writing come back. And she sees when she's snooping that he has a medal, like a war medal. And it's, I don't know much about war medals, but it's star-shaped. So I think it's like either a bronze star or a silver star. At any rate, I think it's supposed to tell us that the time doesn't quite match up for when he would have received this medal to the time that it is now. Given his age now, him receiving that medal would not be possible, is sort of what I think we're cleaning from that. And so at first I thought, because they have a discussion about war and she gets mad at him because he says something about war. I don't know. He didn't mean what she thought he meant about war. Clearly he's been in a war before. And so at first we think, oh, well, he was also in Korea, but no, he wasn't. It was a different war that he was in that we find out a little bit later. And then so Gunny, the little brother, is actually very cute. And when we meet him, he's scared of everything. Like, he's a fraidy cat. At first, he's afraid of this dog. Well, then through a series of encounters with the dog, whose name is Betty Jane, he's like, there's something more to this dog. And he has these magic, one in particular, but a couple of magical experiences with the dog becomes this weird being that Gunny is kind of afraid of at first, but then he realizes it's like turning into these stars and it's actually like a nice being. And then it's, you know, through magic, it's stars and then it turns back into the dog. So he realizes that this dog is not a dog. There's something about this dog. But now he's not scared of everything now. So the dog helps him overcome a lot of his fears. Well, turns out we find out this dog, Betty Jane, is actually a genie. And we'll get back to the genie in a bit, but there is this fishing trip. So it's very exciting. Jack doesn't want to go because the guys are only interested in him going because they think he is this famous baseball player. But it's a father-son fishing camping trip. And he goes because, you know, he doesn't want Tom to miss out on this trip. And one thing that I took note of is, well, it's the 50s, so the cars, it's just lots of fun things that close all of the things. But the cars are interesting. And it was just against the fishing and camping backdrop, there's a pink car. And these men are like, you know, at the time, really a certain type of man that has to be masculine. I don't know if pink cars were like a really popular thing back in the day, but anyway. An interesting juxtaposition, to say the least. Now, Leland's dad. Okay, so it's beautiful. They're camping and they see this, like the group sees this beautiful scene with a deer. And everyone else is like, you know, they're like, oh, wow, look at that. Well, Leland's dad, who gives off major, like, shitty aggro male energy, he sees this deer and all he can think is how fun it's going to be to kill it in November. And he's saying this to Jack as if that's like a regular thing dudes should say to each other to prove how manly they are. And I just love Jack because he is clearly not into what this person has just said to him. Like, he's probably thinking, no, I'm a real man and I don't have to kill innocent creatures for fun to prove that I'm a man. He's trying to not make a big deal of it because that's not why he's there. He's there for Tom. But you can tell that he is less than impressed with that comment. And so for that, I love him. And then that same aggro dude, asks Jack, you know, they're all sitting around the campfire and the kids are off doing something. So now it's just the guys. And he asks Jack about his time on the road playing baseball, about, you know, all the money and the women. And again, just like your typical aggro dude. And again, Jack is like, it's not about that. That's not what it was about. And so it's very clear to us who we're supposed to like and who we're not supposed to like. And so now we're back at home. Camping trip over. Back at home. Meanwhile, there's this Phil dude who has been trying to cozy up to Jeannie. He's been taking her out on dates while Jack babysits the kids. And Jeannie has been kind of confiding in Jack through their series of talks about how she feels like she's trying to start a business, but, you know, it is the 50s and she feels like it would be more secure. She feels like she should just get remarried because that would maybe be a more secure life for the kids. But we see her gain confidence in herself just as having Jack there as a friend and confidant. So Phil proposes to her and she turns him down. She's like, I don't need you. I love it. It's like, again, this movie in the 50s, I'm all for it. well, she doesn't have to remarry. She can do this on her own. Well, then her and Jack have a very passionate night together. And I kind of wanted him to stay too. And if I were her, I definitely would want him to stay. But what's quite nice is she knows, you know, that that's not who he is. That's not what is meant to happen here. He has made an impact in their lives, but he's healed now and he's going to leave. But now we're getting back to the genie. They have a conversation about why he's here, right? So it turns out that, yes, the dog is a genie that grants wishes to families that do good deeds. And you cannot wish for him to stay. That can't be one of your wishes. So Genie knows that he needs to go, but Tom is really hurt. This is like the second father he's losing. And he runs off. Tom and Jack end up having a conversation. And he tells him that how he ended up here is that he was once in war and came across Betty Jane, the genie. If you don't make your own wish, the genie makes a wish for you. Apparently, that's the deal. Because Tom is like, well, I don't want to wish then if I can't wish for you to stay. And so Jack's like, well, if that's the case, I will make a wish for you. I have to. So that's how Jack got here, is that the genie wanted somebody to travel around with her so she wouldn't be lonely. Yeah. And she thought he still had some things to learn. So he wasn't done with his journey, Jack. So that's, he is there as a companion for the genie, the dog, right? Okay. So also we have learned that Gunny, the little brother, has cancer. So obviously that's the wish that Genie has, is that Gunny is going to be okay, right? Gunny's wish is silly, but it's, I don't know, he's maybe like 5. I don't know. I'm not sure how old he is. But his wish is that, so it's the summertime, right? So we're leading up to the 4th of July. He wishes to fly up into and with the fireworks at the 4th of July celebration. Isn't that cute? He's like, really? That's what you want, eh? Okay. And so Jack has to make a wish for Tom because Tom's can't have his wish of Jack staying, right? We'll get to what it is, right? So now we are at the 4th of July celebration and Gunny gets his wish. He isn't scared. Again, this has been a good experience. This time that Jack has been living with the family has been good. It's taught them all some things. And one of the things that it's taught Gunny through the dog is to not be fearful. So he climbs up this tower so that he can take off and fly and get his wish. And he does. Again, it's a fantasy movie. So there's some fantasy elements of him being up in the stars and amongst the fireworks. It's pretty cool. Yeah. And then at this celebration, the dad comes back. He's not dead. He was missing in action. And they say there's kind of like a newscaster voiceover. It's like, on this day in 1955, several POWs were released by the People's Republic of China, blah, blah, blah. So that's what we think, oh, that's awesome. That must have been Jack's wish for Tom, right?
It's not.
All right, but that's awesome. So now they're a family again. Gunny's going to live. Present day. Gunny lives. He's fine. He's still alive and well. But we're in present day now, again, back with adult Tom, and he's being annoyed by his kids. They're driving. He almost hits this guy with his dog, and he gets out of the car to go follow him into the cemetery. And he's hit softly, but hit by a baseball. And then, oh, there's Betty Jane. There's the dog. And then also Jack appears too and briefly clarifies that his wish for Tom was not to have his father back. His wish for Tom was actually that Tom would find happiness in whatever he has. So that's why he came back, because Tom isn't quite getting it. So he's back to remind Tom of that. And then he disappears. Then Jack disappears. So, of course, now Tom does realize how lucky he is, despite the troubles that he's having. You know, his family's all alive and healthy, and he's happy to have them. So he holds his family tight. And then the movie closes on a shot of a tombstone that reads J.W. McLeod, 1919 to 1944. So the war he was in was World War II. He died in 1944. So he's been traveling then as like the sidekick of the genie for 11 years now. And yeah, that's the end of the movie. I don't know. I'm like all smiles. I know it kind of sounds like, oh yeah, it sounds like your typical family movie, but it's really good. And it's a shame that no one knows about it. I will say it's far better than I was not expecting to think much of anything of this movie. It keeps you on your toes and the actors are great. And especially the two leads, Patrick and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. It's kind of a mouthful. They have extremely impactful, dramatic, and emotional moments in the movie. And it kind of makes it a little more than your surface level, like family fantasy movie. So that is Three Wishes, you guys. Have you seen it? If you have, you must tell me what you think. And if you haven't, or even if you have, give it a rewatch. Let me know what you think. You guys, I totally loved seeing all the mid-century modern awesomeness, homes, cars, fashion, etc. in this movie. And we get some Swayze ass, but it is now time to return to the present day reality. Until next time, be kind, rewind.